I call this Committee of Economic Development to order. Can I request that we keep the noise level down? Thank you. I note that quorum is present. Brett Perryman, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from, what day was it, March 13?
I have, and Chair, I would like to move the approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Rep. Perryman. Minutes have been moved. Any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor of adopting the minutes from March 13, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Minutes have been adopted. We have a full agenda today. I want to just note that we also have a large presentation from different groups, so can I kindly request that people keep it very short, and folks who are testifying, keep it under 2 minutes. Thank you. Our first bill on the agenda is House File 4249. Rep. Lee, welcome to the committee. I believe it's your first time presenting a bill in this committee.
That's right, Madam Chair. Hence, we brought cream puffs from a local bakery in St. Paul. So please help yourselves, members and staff.
Safe by the bell. I was going to ask, where are the treats? But they're right there.
Yeah, all right. Set it up early, and so please take some for sundown so you can enjoy as well.
All right. I move that House File 4249 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Rep. Lee, please explain your bill.
Absolutely, and thank you for making time to hear this bill. I'm very honored to present before you all today House File 4249, which is a culmination of decades of work by others before me, and so I'd also like to thank them for getting us this far. There was a very good inside-outside strategy. Today's bill, 4249, would create an office under Explore Minnesota called Explore Minnesota Film. This new office would be tasked with oversight of the Film Production Jobs Program and the Film Production Credit Program, along with promoting Minnesota as a place for film and television production. In fulfilling this mission, Explore Minnesota Film would coordinate all industries vital to television and film production in Minnesota. Currently, these tasks are split between DEED and a nonprofit called Minnesota Film and TV, which was created in 1983 to support the Minnesota film and TV industry. While Minnesota Film and TV has been vital to the industry here in Minnesota, we are the only state with a 501c3 organization overseeing our state's film program. Creating a film office within Explore Minnesota provides the oversight needed for these programs, along with drawing upon Explore Minnesota's years of expertise promoting the state. In fact, my interns were able to pull a list of top films filmed in Minnesota by referencing the Explore Minnesota page dedicated to this. So I thank you for your consideration, and we'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Melody Behan. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Film and TV. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House File 4249. State film commissions have been a vital part of the U.S. film and TV production industry since the 1970s and are recognized by most states as essential economic development tools, particularly with the growth and importance of state production incentives since the mid-1990s. Currently, 43 states have state agency film commissions located within their state's economic development or tourism department. These offices administer film and television incentive programs, provide guidance to productions on location, crew, and vendors, issue or assist with film permits, and market its state as a production destination to the industry. Some states, such as Florida, Iowa, and Missouri, maintain state film offices even in the absence of a state incentive program. As Representative Lee said, there is only one state, Minnesota, that relies on a 501c3 nonprofit to perform the duties of a state film office. After decades of seeing our once thriving industry shrink here in Minnesota because of the lack of a competitive incentive program, the legislature recently made a substantial investment in the future of this industry in the form of a new tax credit. The lack of a state office to provide oversight of this investment seems unwise. It is, at the very least, inefficient. A nonprofit cannot administer a tax credit, but the state must rely on our nonprofit to provide the information, first contact, marketing, application assistance, and on-the-ground assistance to tax credit projects. In terms of attracting productions to a jurisdiction, incentives are key, but a state film office is crucial. A 2019 study by Olsberg SPI on best practice in screen sector development found that because of the intersection of production with state and local governments and public and private sectors that include transportation, tourism, economic development, finance, and more, a supportive central government approach is vital. Within this landscape, the report states, a well-resourced and connected film commission is essential. While Minnesota Film and TV is able to perform some of the functions of a state film office, there are critical areas where the authority and connections of a government agency is needed. We believe the state and our industry are currently ill-served by relying on a nonprofit to perform the duties of a state agency.
Thank you for your testimony. And we have, I believe, two more testifiers. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Alstead. I'm the political director for the Teamsters Joint Council 32, representing 75,000 active and retired members across Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 4249. The Teamsters represent 15,000 motion picture division members across the country, and we were absolutely thrilled with the passage of last year's incentive program that has allowed our state to become competitive in the film and TV industry. There are currently 43 states with state agency film commissions. Many states, including Florida and Iowa, maintain state film commissions even without a tax credit or rebate program incentive. There is one state, Minnesota, that relies on a 501c3 nonprofit to perform the duties of a film commission. While Minnesota Film and TV has done their very best to work with the state on this, it's created both a confusing and inefficient process for the administration of production programs. The Teamsters, along with our labor siblings in SAG-AFTRA and IATSE, are proud of Minnesota Film and TV for being incredible stewards of this incentive. We know this is an industry that's here to stay. Let's just make sure we continue doing it right. Thank you.
Thank you. One more testifier, please come to the testifying table, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Simpson. I am a member of IATSC Local 490. Local 490 is a labor union that represents film and TV crew in the state of Minnesota. Our members work in almost every aspect of the industry. Here in our state, we represent office staff, prop masters, wardrobe stylists, location managers, script supervisors, grips, gaffers, electricians, painters, set carpenters, set decorators, makeup artists, sound mixers, craft services, set medics, and special effects. These are all real middle-class jobs that we all do here in Minnesota. I also want to point out just real quick that as we, with this tax credit that we've been working with, as we're growing our industry, we're going to be bringing in future generations. And you see, like, all these high school kids here, and they're not here for us. I don't want to take credit for them. Some of them are going to end up working in some form of this industry as well. And this is something that's very important. Our local industry is profoundly impacted by the Minnesota Film Production Tax Credit. This program allows us to compete with other states and prevent film and television about Minnesota being produced someplace else. The production tax credit, as you've heard already, is managed by the Minnesota Film and Television Board, which is a nonprofit organization. That scenario is completely unique to the state of Minnesota, not just in the United States, but around the world as well. It may seem cost-effective, but what happens is they are receiving a match grant appropriation from the state, so they're still receiving funds from the state, but they have to spend 40 hours a week fundraising to meet that match, and that's 40 hours a week not spent on marketing the state. So in essence, we are paying for the office without having it a state agency. None of this, as what I'm saying, is to cast doubt on the performance of the employees at the Minnesota Film and TV Board. Our labor union has complete confidence in their abilities, but it's just painfully obvious that spending that amount of time fundraising to keep the lights on is not benefiting the state. So the members of Local 490 are urging you, Madam Chair, and the committee to please support this bill in your omnibus and to help us create a state film agency. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Discussion on the bill. Rep. Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is just kind of with us moving around where this is going to be located. My question is, what kind of oversight will this have over where these tax credits are going? I mean that, so like what sort of oversight are we going to have over the productions, over the crews working? So we make sure that the tax credits go to good companies that are making sure they're paying employees well, they're taking care of it, they're taking care of their communities, they're being good stewards, because we don't want to see bad actors getting tax credits.
Rep. Lee.
Madam Chair. So I'll start very briefly. I mean, this is precisely why we're moving the operations to a state agency. You know, we, as the legislative branch, right, have co-equal powers with our executive branch partners, and you know, we, I imagine, would use those tools. And I will pass it to Melody for other comments.
Thank you, Representative, Madam Chair. Oversight is a crucial issue, and. You know, I'm very proud of the work that my office has done in the last few years in terms of being good stewards along with deed of the taxpayer dollars. But that hasn't always been the case. And in 2015, the Legislative Auditor's Office issued a report on the operations and rebate grant funds that have been allocated to the organization, and they found that the state was taking a what they called a laissez-faire approach to oversight, and had allowed a private entity to set the agenda for a state economic development program. That just doesn't, that's not good. And right now, I think we're in great shape, but a personnel could change all that. So I think it's really important that the state have oversight and control of this. Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I'll just follow up. So thank you for recognizing that, because that's definitely a concern I have, especially when we look at this bill's going to be focusing on making sure, you know, larger tax credits go to greater Minnesota. So what I just don't want to see happen is smaller communities that may not have the capacity all of a sudden have a production crew come in, and, you know, those communities are taken advantage of, and the tax credits and the money leaves the state because they see that opportunity to take advantage of those people. So I just hope that if we're doing this, the oversight can stay there, and we make sure these tax credits are going to good partners for our communities and going to provide good jobs and opportunity for our people.
Thank you.
All right. Question on the bill? Oh, Lead Kasnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the record, the testifiers should identify themselves, and I didn't get you at the first, but even at the follow-up questions. But I believe you, if you could re-identify yourself, and then I have a follow-up question.
I'm Melody Behan, Executive Director of Minnesota Film and TV, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And she did testify you were running a little late.
No, I understand that, but it's the custom that providing subsequent testimony, they usually do re-identify themselves for the tape.
I
appreciate it. My question is moving it from the nonprofit into deed, is there a named director already, or is it presumed that you will become the new director within deed and maintain that kind of status?
Ms. Behan.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a decision that is up to the state. Those jobs, the jobs that would be created in this office would be posted for application, just like any other state job.
You have a follow-up, Lead Kasnick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it probable that you would then be applying for that position as well?
I don't know if that is that. I don't know if that's an appropriate question to ask.
Why?
I mean, we're not here about her job. We're here about this bill. So, I mean, I don't know. I really think that's too personal. So we were not asking Ms. Behan about her future, endeavors and what she plans to do with her life. We're only talking about this bill and the scope of this bill. And that's outside of the scope of this bill.
Well, Madam Chair, I respect your judgment there, but I think it is relevant a little bit. But we'll leave it at that. I think it is
important. Right. Any other discussion? Last words on the bill, Rep. Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask for your support of this bill, which will create a new state agency and that, again, will create oversight over a process that should have been overseen by, you know, state agencies. And so I hope that you'll consider this as part of your omnibus and, you know, hope that anyone interested in applying for any of these positions do look on the Explore Minnesota website. We have many openings at the state of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Lee. I renew my motion that House File 4249 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Our next bill is House File 2821. Rep. Sansomora. All right. I move that House File 2821 be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy. Rep. Sansomora, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. It's always hard to follow someone that brought treats. but happy to be here today to talk about what I think is a really important bill that could really have major impacts on the way that we do our work here at the state legislature. So this bill is about creating a policy and procedure for racial equity impact notes at the state level, specifically for bills that deal with deed, economic development. These racial equity impact notes are used in a number of state legislatures around the country, and they give us information about how bills could impact different racial groups. Some bills that may seem on the surface to be having really positive effects, when you actually dig into the data, can have disparate effects on different racial groups. And additionally, racial equity impact notes would tell us, you know, what would the economic benefit be to certain communities of doing a bill over not doing the bill. So kind of similar to how we have local impact notes or fiscal notes, these would be able to be requested for certain bills and would help legislators as they are doing the business of legislating. So a little bit of the history of the bill. This bill has been worked on at the Minnesota State Legislature for a number of years. And this is a more kind of narrow version of the bill than has been in the past. And I think while I think it would be really impactful to look at racial equity kind of across our work, this bill proposes to really just start with one state agency, one department, and look at the economic impacts of bills that fall under deeds purview. This comes out of a working group that was put together by the Center for the Economic Inclusion that included some legislative staff to really look at kind of how we could do these racial equity impact notes and how it would work at the state of Minnesota. So there is a report. I'm not sure if this got out, but maybe we can email it out after to the committee just to kind of share more about the work of that group and kind of what are some of the recommendations. You know, to talk about why we need this bill, you know, I know that oftentimes in committee, I think particularly as our legislature has diversified, as we have more representatives who represent communities of color, we sometimes feel like we don't have all the information that we need to make decisions about bills. And I think this will give us some shared information based on hard data. And so I think it will help us make more informed decisions. I think the kind of inclusion, the introduction of this bill today is a starting conversation. I know that we have had some initial conversations with various departments, and, you know, this would be a major change for kind of how we do business here. And so I look forward to starting the conversation today. I think there will be a fiscal note that will be coming, has been requested about kind of what would be the fiscal impact of this bill be, and I look forward to continued conversations with the departments and agencies and committee members about how we could make this a key part of our work. But I do want to now bring up some testifiers who I think can really speak to, from various community members, organizations, government partners, the need for this kind of work here at the legislature.
Thank you, Representative Zamora. And we have the first testifier, and I do not want to kill your name. I'll just let you introduce yourself for the record and proceed. I don't want to sound ignorant, so I'll...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate your sensitivity there. My name is Vajong Moore. I'm the Director of Racial and Health Equity Advocacy at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota. We are the largest health plan in the state, covering over 2.5 million members and across all 87 counties. We also proudly sued the tobacco industry and championed universal meals last session, all in the name of advancing racial and health equity. From our experience and from the science, we see gross inequities across health issues, from COVID-19 to diabetes, from cancer to mental health issues. And what we know very clearly is that many of these diseases are preventable. And according to the CDC and WHO, the World Health Organization, a health inequity is a difference in community health that is avoidable, preventable, and unjust. And so it's in that vein that we are here to support this bill to ensure that racial equity impacts and analysis are built into the front end of policymaking and creation, that it is not treated as an amenity, that it is essential to creating the common good. We feel that this will be a tool for early detection and prevention, just like a colonoscopy or any kind of screening in the medical field. We don't think this is a silver bullet by any means, but we feel that by seeding racial equity criterion into the policymaking process, we have a foothold to have more rigorous and ongoing, deeper community engagement and a more equitable outcome. Lastly, I just want to make sure that you all understand that this certainly is a moral imperative for our state, but in partnership with the University of Minnesota, the School of Medicine, and the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, we partnered to commission a study on the cost of health inequities, and we saw that these inequities cost Minnesota $2.26 billion every year in lost wages, lost employment. And so it is very expensive for our state, and it is costing us lives. We urge you, we implore you to support this bill to make sure that Minnesota can become the epicenter for advancing racial and health equity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And up next we have Michael. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak in support of racial equity impact notes. My name is Dr. Michael Aylward. I am a primary care physician at the Community University Healthcare Center, which is a federally qualified healthcare center in the Phillips Neighborhood Clinic, or Phillips Neighborhood, excuse me. I'm also a member of Minnesota Doctors for Health Equity, which is a statewide coalition of physicians and health professionals working towards health equity. So Minnesota has some of the best health outcomes in the country, but those outcomes are not distributed equally. Minnesota also has the largest health disparities in the country across a range of metrics, with Black, Indigenous, Latina, Asian, and other communities experiencing shorter lifespans and high rates of diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and chronic diseases when compared to white Minnesotans. These disparities exist because of social and legal structures that create and perpetuate them. I see patients throughout the lifespan, and part of my job is working with patients to prevent and mitigate these diseases, but I also see many patients who are suffering needlessly due to preventable conditions that arise from lack of housing, education, access to healthy food, access to transportation, availability of work, and other social determinants of health. In June of 2022, the State House approved a resolution that declared racism to be a public health crisis. Racial equity impact notes are an opportunity to make good on this promise and provide transparency and accountability to laws and policies. Systems are created by people who make decisions, like all of us in this room, and the solution to healthcare inequities is addressing the root causes of poor health. Assessing the racial impact of decisions allows for health in all policies that actually benefit everyone. It is impossible to go back in time, but imagine a world where we made decisions with consistent, just consideration of the consequences of these decisions. The crack cocaine epidemic could have been treated as the medical crisis it was. The criminal legal system could have considered mental health and addiction treatment all along. Medical assistance could be available to everyone who needs it. Highways could be built in ways that don't split neighborhoods and put people at risk for cardiovascular and lung disease. You have the opportunity to create a system that, moving forward, addresses these issues before they happen. Last week in clinic, I saw an indigenous gentleman who's struggling with the death of multiple family members in his family, a late diagnosis of cancer, an untreated mental health condition, an opioid overdose. He was at risk of losing his housing and has continued to work and support his children and grandchildren who live with him. Without housing, he may lose his job. Without his job, he loses his insurance and the ability to take his medications. So too do all his children and grandchildren. This is the burden many Minnesotans live with daily. As policymakers, you have the opportunity to alleviate suffering by creating just, transparent, and accountable policies. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Nicole. Please come to the testifying table, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Thanks, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Nicole Donoso, policy organizer of Voices for Racial Justice. At my work, we believe that policy should be used as a transformational tool to invest in our communities, protect our rights, and bring our voices and expertise into the rooms of power. But too often, even well-intended policies result in racial disparities because potential impacts were not sufficiently considered in a bill passage and implementation. In 2015, Voices for Racial Justice had a gathering to discuss which policy efforts to include in the racial equity agenda of that year. At that meeting, someone from the partner organization explained their idea to move a bill to eliminate payday lending. Another organizer from the Black community expressed his deep concern of those loans being eliminated because many people in his community use those in moments of crisis. He, instead, advocated for putting caps on their interest rates. This was a moment where people with good intentions were proposing a policy that was not the one that the community needed at the time. That is why Voices for Racial Justice support House File 2821, as it will provide an assessment of the potential racial economic disparities that might be created or exacerbated by the legislation. We know that there is always concern about the capacity of any agency of doing these notes. We firmly believe that it's past the time for any of us to use this as an excuse. Last fall, we had a cohort of 10 community-based organizations to discuss how we could be better at conducting policy assessments to advance racial justice. We are building the capacity in our communities, and we urge you to do the same at the legislature. Finally, by supporting this bill, you will demonstrate your commitment to advancing racial justice in Minnesota and to make it a place for all communities to prosper and to live with dignity and joy.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Antonia. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of this committee. My name is Antonia Wilcoxon. I'm president of the Minnesota Public Health Association and also an independent consultant working on health inequities. We are reaching to you to convey the Minnesota Public Health Association unwavering endorsement of House File 2821. It is a crucial bill that seeks to create a framework for requesting a racial equity impact note for proposed legislation. The Minnesota Public Health Association is a volunteer-driven professional organization with 350 public health professional members throughout the state of Minnesota. Our mission is to create a healthier Minnesota through effective public health practice and engaged citizens. We are an active, independent voice for public health in the state. We are also an affiliate of the American Public Health Association, whose mission is to improve the health of the public and achieve equity in health status for all Americans. House File 2821 aligns directly with the Public Health Association endeavors to foster a healthier Minnesota by incorporating a process for a racial equity impact note into proposed legislation. Such a note is a systematic examination of how different racial and ethnic groups will likely be affected by a proposed action or decision. These notes are usually used to minimize unanticipated adverse consequences in a variety of contexts, including the analysis of proposed legislation, policies, institutional practices, programs, plans, and budgetary decisions. This provides an objective-based assessment to inform legislators and the public of potential racial economic disparities that may be exacerbated or created by proposed legislation. It can be a vital tool for preventing institutional racism and for identifying new options to remedy long-standing inequities. House File 2821 has the capacity to enhance governance, foster economic stability, and make significant progress in promoting racial and health equity in the state by incorporating these notes in legislative process. We know, and we have repeated very often for decades now, that although Minnesota is one of the healthier states in the country, not all of our communities are afforded the same opportunities for health. This is a well-known dictum that we have been tired of repeating. I think this note provides a great opportunity for us to move the needle and to do something that is going to benefit the public good. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last testifier is Faith Jackson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Faith Jackson. I'm the Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer for the City of Bloomington. And today, in just 120 seconds, I plan to do three things. I will describe the value of racial equity impact assessments, the ability for them to be implemented effectively and practically, and also describe their impact. So to start, racial equity impact assessments are really just a planning tool. So like environmental health impact assessments or a workplace risk assessment, it really allows us to uncover any sort of potential adverse impacts in policy and decisions while we're still in that planning stage. They've been very impactful in the city of Bloomington. You have before you a letter of support from Councilmember Jenna Carter that describes that. I lift up one example for that, and that is amendments to the city of Bloomington's rental housing policy. In that process, staff discovered that many new Americans had varying relative structures and that our code, which had very restrictive immediate family language, was disproportionately impacting BIPOC individuals. In modifying that structure, we were able to move away from restrictive language and really just focus on what mattered most, amount of people per square footage. And while that was helpful for those who had been disproportionately impacted, it was also really helpful for many of our senior residents who had children or grandchildren moving in to support them. And so now that I've talked about value and impact, you're probably asking, well, how do you make this work? Is it practical? The answer, it is. In Bloomington, I work closely with the staff who are completing impact assessments, both in gathering data and analyzing, and also in doing community engagement and gathering feedback. And so this makes the process both manageable for staff and also ensures the integrity of the process. So in short, racial equity impact assessments are valuable, they're impactful, and they're also practical. And then I end in my last 30 seconds on a personal note. As a Black woman, I know far too well the impacts and lasting effects of racialized policies and decisions. In fact, many people in my network today are grieving the loss of Jessica Pettway, an influencer who died and was taken from us far too soon after being misdiagnosed several times. And while I distinctly understand the difference between crafting policy and providing direct health care, it's not lost on me the impact of the social determinants of health, things like employment, housing, and economic development. These things have a very real and tangible impact on individual public health outcomes. And so I see racial equity impact assessments as an opportunity to do real and great important work and help create a more impactful and valuable and inclusive community for all. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I believe we have an amendment, the A1 amendment. Lead Kosnick, you have that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the H2821 A1 amendment.
Okay. Can you explain your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. What the amendment does is removes lines 2.7 to 2.15. In that, it suggests that the LBO take a look at a variety of different data centers in here, but it's not fully encompassing of the talents and abilities of the Legislative Budget Office to fully analyze, and I think it's kind of restrictive to list, you know, just kind of a handful of data points. In fact, one of them on line 2.13 is the John Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center, and looking at their website, I don't know if the author is aware that John Hopkins has stopped collecting data as of March 10th, 2023. So to illustrate, putting this in language is already outdated and irrelevant, but the LBO certainly, in providing these notes, could find any data that they feel relevant, and so you're kind of limiting, even though it may be permissive language. I think I don't know that it fulfills the whole intent. There could be other data points that are more relevant, determining on whatever the particular file might be. And so I think it actually limits by putting it in language of what they may or may not look for. And so that's one thing. The other one is the Kaiser Health Family Foundation on health disparities and summaries on that, dealing with health. Is this bill going, Madam Chair, my understanding, back to state government, or are we going to that?
Going to state government.
Okay. Well, let's just take up the deletion and kind of handicapping and pigeonholing the Legislative Budget Office to these data centers. So I think it would be allow it to more broad discretion if we remove those data points on there. So I would encourage members to delete those out of there and give the LBO a little bit more discretion.
Discussion on the amendment. Rep. Katisa-Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kosnick, I understand your concern with the LBO starting with a certain number of sources, but the language seems to be clear to me in line 2.8. that it's including but not limited to. And I think sometimes when we, if you have suggestions of other things that maybe Representative Sensor-Mira could add to this section, I think it's intended to be a well-rounded breadth of information and different sources that they can consult with and then go above and beyond that should they need to utilize other sources. But I don't really see why we would delete suggested starting places that include things like the United States Census Bureau and some of the most well-known, our very own DEED data center, the Minnesota Compass data. I mean, these things seem like they're pretty objective and nonpartisan reference sources, and I think that's probably a good thing for the LBO to start there and then move beyond.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd be curious what the author's thoughts are on this, but since I have the floor, I would just say I don't believe that currently with LBO with fiscal notes that we say you have to look at this specific data points on that and cert calculations. It's we don't know what the future legislation proposed may be, and so basically we're steering, and the LBO and like I said, kind of predetermining data that they use, and so taking it out just makes it more permissive to use their discretion. And you know, if this was to pass, the authors may work with the LBO and on their intent and say maybe this is areas that you might want to look at for reasoning and data. But putting it in here very clearly steers the LBO, and I don't know if they plan on testifying here, but maybe at the next stop. And so that's my intention. I'd be curious what the author's comments would be.
And I believe the LBO is here. It's my understanding, but Rep. Sensimura.
Yeah, and if the committee would like to hear from the LBO, I'm open to that. You know, I would say I appreciate the conversation, Representative Koznick, but I would agree with Representative Katizo-Atun. It's permissive language, and I think when we are asking, and I'm sure you as a more seasoned legislator have experienced this, I think when we are asking our agencies to do something new, oftentimes they want to have a better understanding of the legislative intent and want us to kind of provide as much information as possible. These sources came out of work from this working group that was put together that included an LBO representative to kind of help craft what this legislation could look like. I think these are all trusted sources, and I think having that starting point, especially for kind of a new concept for our legislature, is really important. But I would be willing to work with you on if there are additional sources that you would want to see in here. I think, you know, we want to make sure that when we have these notes, they are looked at as neutral. I think that's really important to get bipartisan buy-in on this. So I would love to work with you to continue to think about what sources could be included in this list.
All right. Are we good?
I've said enough.
Okay. All right. Let's take a vote on this. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
No.
Nay.
All right, the amendment fails.
Koznick votes aye.
All right, the amendment fails.
I thought we convinced you, Representative Koznick.
Discussion on the bill.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump ahead.
No, we can start with you. That's fine, yeah. Koznick. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, one of the items spoken quite extensively on in the public testimony, but also within the document, like I mentioned, the Kaiser Family Foundation, the health disparity parts, I would move that we refer this bill to the Health Finance and Policy Committee to have them more closely look at that and see if there's any concerns or suggestions from that committee, and I would request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call is granted. I believe the bill is going to state GOF, and after that, I don't know what the pathway is. Representative Moore, do you know where it's going after that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not believe that it is planned to have a stop in the Health Committee. You know, I know that members talked today about health. I think something that we've talked about at the legislature is the connection between health and wealth. Health is wealth. Wealth is health. So I think it's important to have a broad understanding of how economic choices and economic development impacts people's health, community health, but I do not believe that this bill needs a stop in the Health Committee.
All right. We're going to vote on the motion to send this bill to health, and a roll call has been requested, and I am agreeing with the author that this bill does not need to go to health. We will take the roll.
Chair Hassan?
No.
Hassan? No. Vice Chair Hansen?
No.
Vice Chair Hansen? No. Lead Koznick?
Yes.
Lead Koznick? Yes. Rep. Beist?
No.
Rep. Beist? No. Rep. Igo?
It's not here.
Excused. Rep. Katizo-Batun?
No.
Rep. Katizo-Batun? No. Rep. Kozlowski?
No.
Rep. Kozlowski? No. Rep. Perryman?
Rep. Perryman?
Yes.
Okay.
Rep. Perryman? Yes. Rep. Ryer?
No.
Rep. Ryer? No. Rep. Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Rep. Schumacher? Yes. Rep. Smith?
No.
Rep. Smith? No. Rep. Zhang?
No.
Rep. Zhang? No. Rep. Wiener? Excused. The roll is closed.
With 8 no's and 3 ayes, the motion does not prevail. Discussion on the bill, Rep. Kutisutun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we can confer with House Research on this, but in the previous discussion about Representative Kosnick's amendment, I did notice that in line 2.13, schools referred to as John Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center, and I believe the correction should be Johns Hopkins, just adding an S to John in 2.13. So maybe a potential amendment that we could fix, or that Representative Sensenmayer could take forward to the next committee. Just wanted to point that out.
Is that something we can do?
Madam Chair, I can follow up with Representative Sensenmayer on that.
Okay. All right. Can I continue?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that this is such an interesting proposal, Representative Sensenmayer, and I know that you are not the first representative to work on this, and these are really important conversations. I think that, you know, when we consider the history of not only Minnesota, but of the whole country, it being Women's History Month, after all, that if people, a variety of people, were in positions of power from the start of this country, women wouldn't have had to wait so many years to vote. People of color wouldn't have had to wait so many years for the right to vote. When we are in positions of power, we can help set the agenda and make the future a better place. So I'm thrilled and I'm honored to be serving with a diverse body in the House, but also in the Senate here in Minnesota. And we're starting to look a lot more like the state of Minnesota. And so when we look at objective data that is going to help us do better in the future, I think that's only going to bring good things. If we keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting things to change, that's the definition of insanity. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward and continuing conversations with a variety of stakeholders. And I think that this could be really crucial in shaping the future work of the legislature.
All right, Rep. Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, Rep. Sensenmayer, for bringing this bill. It's been something, a concept that I've been really interested in. And the reason I love it so much is that we come into this body and we have this idea that we want to transform things. We want justice. We want really big goals. And I'm a fan of like concrete, measurable action items. And I feel like this is that. It's taking, like we heard people talk about how this is systemic, how this is objective. And I just really love how we're saying this is one very methodical way that we can build into our legislative process to get us from here to where we want to get, which is a more just, equitable Minnesota. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Rep. Perryman.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Mine are a little more comments about what we talked about the list earlier. There's a great extensive list set forth, and I understand why you have a list, but if you can consider also other outsources, and I know you will, but and I have a list here of the Cato Institute, Heritage Foundation, the Center for American Experiment. Maybe they're not all the right places to go and get some information, but I just would love to expand the list more and see more of a wide variety than what you have. So just a typical comment, and ask for your help in that. And if you have any questions, love to just give you a whole list, and then you can pick and choose. Thank you.
Representative Samora, closing comments on the bill.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the conversation, and I look forward to continued conversation. You know, I think when we know better, we do better, and I know that all of us are very invested in doing the best job that we can with the time that we are here in the legislature representing Minnesotans. And I believe that more data will help us make better decisions. And I will say, you know, I think I'm looking forward to continued conversations with agencies and departments about how we can do this and how we can build our capacity, build our muscles around racial equity. But I will say that a number of other states have been able to implement this, and I know with the amazing folks that we have working at the state of Minnesota that we will be able to do it too. So thank you, and I look forward to sending this bill on to state and local governments.
Thank you, Rep. Sensenmura. I renew my motion to send the House file, to re-refer House File 2821 to the state and local government finance and policy. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
No.
Nay. Motion prevails and your bill is on its way. All right. I'm going to have Vice Chair Hansen take over as I move to the testifying table for my bills.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3847. Representative Hassan moves that House File 3847 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. There is an author's amendment to the A1. Rep. Hassan, would you like to explain your amendment and move that?
So moved, Madam Chair. And the A1 amendment just puts the bill in the shape that I would like.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Rep. Hassan, would you like to go ahead and describe your bill, House File 3847?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3847 is making technical change on multiple programs that we created last year. The Small Business Assistance Partnership Grant Program, Minnesota Expanding Opportunity Fund Program, Minnesota Emerging Entrepreneurship Program, and Community Wealth Building Grant Pilot Project. And then with that, I will, I have a couple testifiers and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Chair Hassan. To our testifier, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hassan and members of the committee. My name is Trish DeAnda. I am the Chief Financial Officer at Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, MCCD. Last fall, MCCD convened a statewide working group to thoughtfully consider changes to existing deed small business programs and to also identify gaps to help shape future programs or legislation. The result is House File 3847, which has a few key themes. One is to ensure that the loan program can be offered as fee-based loans to provide more inclusive financing options. Two, cap interest rates on loan programs so that these specific loan funds cannot exceed 10%. Three, clarify that tribal economic development entities and community development financial institutions are eligible to access these programs. Four, streamline the underwriting process for the emerging entrepreneur loan program by removing duplicative underwriting for partner organizations. Five, adjust the small business partnership program so that the grant can only be used to provide free technical assistance. And lastly, incorporate automatic loan forgiveness for borrowers in good standings for two of the loan programs. Ultimately, we hope that these changes will ensure that organizations around the state deploying these resources can better support small businesses that they work with, and that those small businesses receive similar support or loan offerings no matter which deed program they contact. I want to thank deed for their input and willingness to make these programs work better for everyone. I want to thank all of the organizations that participated in the working group for their help in putting this bill together, and I want to thank Chair Hassan for carrying this bill.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Our next testifier can make their way to the table. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Vice Chair Hansen, members of the committee, my name is Zamza Mohammed, and I am a business advisor at Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, MCCD. As Trish mentioned, we're hoping this legislation will enact a change that allows for fee-based lending. Using state resources to offer fee-based lending has the potential to change the financial opportunities for entrepreneurs that require an alternative financing model due to their faith or beliefs. Because these lending resources do not require interest to be exchanged from partner organizations, they are more compatible with Islamic finance principles, which prohibit riba, otherwise known as interest. Also aligning with similar models used by other faith traditions that emphasize ethical and socially responsible finance. At MCCD, we currently offer some fee-based lending, but are limited in our capacity due to current funding constraints. State funding can help MCCD and other nonprofit organizations, economic development organizations, reach more small businesses. And we hope that fee-based lending becomes a standard tool for economic development organizations statewide. We know that small businesses owned by immigrants have a profound impact in our communities, and they emerge to address a critical community need, whether that be culturally specific healthcare clinics or providing other essential services such as grocery stores or pharmacies or other day-to-day establishments. By making sure that Minnesota has the necessary funding to support these enterprises, we do not only stimulate economic growth, but also cultivate wealth-building opportunities for those who benefit the most from this change, which is our immigrant entrepreneurs. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Our next testifier can make their way to the table, introduce yourself, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jer Tao. I am the Economic Prosperity Director for the Hmong American Partnership. Thank you for the opportunity to share HAP's testimony about our CDFI services in support of the technical changes to Bill HF3847. For over 30 years, HAP's mission has been to help our communities achieve their potential by providing holistic, culturally relevant wraparound services that help our people move from poverty to prosperity. HAP has helped fuel Minnesota's economy by supporting business growth through our CDFI services in business microlending, technical assistance, business development, education. Last year, we served 147 businesses through one-on-one technical assistance, totaling over 560 hours. We've held 15 business development workshops with over 400 participants. All of our technical assistance and business development services are free. 15 businesses have received microloans through our CDFI, totaling nearly $400,000. HAP was recently awarded the Small Business Partnership Grant and the Minnesota Expanding Opportunity Fund Program. These two programs will allow HAP the resources needed to continue providing free technical assistance, business development education, and add additional lending capital to our microlending program. With your support in passing this bill, CDFIs are intentionally recognized and included, and CDFIs like HAP will be able to use up the 50% of these grant funds for administrative costs. This increase is a step in the right direction and is critical to the sustainability of our operation. These are just a couple of the positive results that will enable HAP and CDFIs to drive greater impact to our community. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We have one last testifier. If you can make your way to the table, introduce yourself, and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Hassan and members of this committee. Chair. My name is Violeta Hernandez Espinosa, and I'm here today representing Catalyst Coalition. Madam Chair and members, thanks for this opportunity. Since 2016, the Catalyst Coalition is dedicated to fostering a vibrant ecosystem for BIPOC entrepreneurs and their businesses in Minnesota. Through strategic collaboration and innovative approaches, Catalyst strives to reduce racial income and wealth disparities in Minnesota, a goal that we share with the state of Minnesota and this committee as it strives to close these gaps in an effort to secure Minnesota's strong future. Catalyst is a consortium of seven BIPOC-serving community development financial institutions, or CDFIs for short, in Minnesota, including African Economic Development Solutions, AEDS, Community Reinvestment Fund, or CRF, the Latino Economic Development Center, LEDC, the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, MEDA, the Neighborhood Development Center, or NDC, the Northside Economic Opportunity Network, NEON, and Women Venture. On behalf of Catalyst, I'm here to express support of House File 3847, which will have impact on members of our coalition who are or could be receiving funds to support communities through the programs mentioned in this bill. One of the first lessons I learned in my Economics 101 classes is that there is no such thing as a free lunch. While these programs align with implementing our organizational missions, we are confronted with the reality that we are, as being nonprofit corporations, that we must seek funds to implement our missions. The addition of funds to cover program implementation costs is critical to our nonprofit organizations, so we appreciate these proposed changes to the original program design, especially as supports to businesses must be free or low cost under these programs. To close, we'd like this committee to know that we appreciate the supports provided by the state of Minnesota for Black, Indigenous, and people of color or BIPOC-owned businesses through Catalyst members who are the front lines in supporting these businesses that are critical to Minnesota's economic growth. We look forward to working with all of you in the future as we continue to strengthen these supports. You've already had a couple of our coalition members present to you earlier this session, but we look forward to providing continued status and outcomes progress reports in the future from our members. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We have an A2 amendment. Representative Kosnick, would you like to move and explain your amendment?
I believe Representative Igo will.
Yeah. Representative Igo, would you like to move and explain the A2 amendment instead?
I would like to move the A2 amendment and explain it. So it's a really simple amendment. It's going to be on page 2, line 14. We're going to delete 15 and add 10. So through some of my reading and work in economic development, it's pretty common that we only see that 10% of grant funds are used for expenses. So I just want to make sure that when we're looking at these programs that are going to be giving out grants, that the most money possible is being used to actually help what the grants are for and not for those admin expenses. So I'm hoping we can accept this amendment today and get a little bit more money out to these groups that need it.
Representative Chair Hassan, I'm sorry, any discussion or comments on the A2 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Igo, for the amendment. I believe there was a lot of work spent on reforming this programs. Multiple entities and community groups have spent all their summer trying to evaluate what's the best way to make these programs work. And this is the recommendation coming from not only the CDFIs, but also the community groups that have been working on this. I don't believe that we should make it 10. We want to keep it at 15% because this is a recommendation not only from CDFIs but also community groups that this is the best use of the money. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. Any further discussion to the A2 amendment? Lead Kosnick.
Madam Chair, I would support the A2?
Yes.
The A2 amendment, Representative Igo. The administrative costs generally in most of the grant programs through DEED are 10% or even less. We've worked a lot in the state government finance and have that's kind of a more of established baseline that it's even lower than 10%. So 10% is the high range. In this bill, we're jacking it up to 15%. And interestingly, on line 9.15, that's a different issue. 3.29, we have a maximum interest rate of 10%, but you're allowing an administrative fee of 15%. And so, in one point of the bill, you're concerned about cost, and another point, you're not. And so, we're exceeding 10% for the big guy by going to 15%. And I think, you may want to consider being consistent at just 10% for the big guy.
Thank you, Lead Kosnick.
I think Kerry Johnson has.
Sure. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the committee and feel free to respond to the comments on the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. My name is Carrie Johnson. I am the Director of State Policy and Field Building at the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. Thank you for the question and appreciate this discussion. I do want to clarify that there are four different programs in this package bill. The amendment pertains to the Small Business Assistance Partnership Program. That is a competitive grant program allocated at DEED on a biannual basis. And the discussion essentially was that because organizations applying for these resources ultimately are doing work on behalf of the state, the 15% goes to cover not even the full percentage of expenses for reporting, just kind of including travel, because we have organizations that travel throughout the entire state, or you know, in greater Minnesota, certainly we have certain coverage areas could be 300 miles apart. And so we're trying to make sure that we can cover some of the expenses incurred so that we can deploy these resources. I do also think that the return on investment of having these organizations out in the state deploying these technical assistance resources to small businesses has a huge return on investment. And I do also think if something were like Representative Spencer Mira's proposal were to pass, we would see that this program has a huge impact on racial equity as well. And just that is kind of the reason of the 15%. And then I just want to clarify that the 10% is on for a interest that can be charged. And so it's a different program and it's a different different amount.
Thank you for that explanation. Any further discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair and Rep. And my question is very simple. We're talking about 15%. Are you familiar or could you talk to any other programs that you're seeing that really are at 10%? And this might be just one of those because of the great work your group did to come up with the 15%. But I'm just wondering if there's any other programming that you're experiencing that is at 10%.
Thank you, Rep. Perryman. And just to clarify, we are currently at 10%. The bill before us today moves this to 15%. But any comments, Chair Hassan, or to the testifier?
Sorry, I didn't even understand the question. Sorry.
Rep. Perryman, would you mind repeating your question, please?
It was basically, thank you, Chair, Rep. It was just a question of are there any other grants that are getting the 15%?
Chair Hassan or to our testifier, would you care to answer that?
Thank you, Chair and Representative. So I do not have any knowledge of any other programs that would be receiving 15%. As you heard from a number of the testifiers, this percentage would go would be deeply beneficial to the overall operations of the organizations. And again, I strongly believe that there is a high return on investment of this program, and this 15% would allow organizations to not have to fundraise as much resources from philanthropic resources or from donors, and so they can actually spend more of their time working with small businesses and you know, getting that access out there in the state rather than fundraising to make up the difference.
Thank you for that comment. And members, if we could try to move things along, we do have another amendment and another bill to get through. Representative Perryman, any follow-up?
No, I'm good.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Igo, closing comments on the A2 amendment.
Thank you. I guess I just want to close. And we heard from Representative Kosling and some of the other discussion we've had. The state as a whole has been doing a lot of work to try and bring that down, those costs down, so we can keep more money going out in these grants. I just think that if we go down the slippery slope of increasing this to 15, what other programs are going to follow with it, and we're going to see less actual dollars hitting these groups' pockets to actually do the good work that they need to do. So I'd strongly encourage that we support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments and discussion on the A2 amendments.
Can I request a roll call as well?
Representative Igo requests a roll call. We will do a roll call on the A2 amendment. Go ahead and take the roll for the A2 amendment.
Chair Hassan?
No.
Hassan? No. Vice Chair Hansen?
No.
Vice Chair Hansen? No. Lead Kosnick?
Yes.
Lead Kosnick? Yes. Rep Feist?
No.
Rep Feist? No. Rep Igo?
Igo, aye.
Rep Igo? Yes. Rep. Katiza Watun?
No.
Rep. Katiza Watun? No. Rep. Kozlowski?
No.
Rep. Kozlowski? No. Rep. Perryman?
Yes.
Rep. Perryman? Yes. Rep. Ryer?
No.
Rep. Ryer? No. Rep. Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Rep. Schumacher? Yes. Rep. Smith?
No.
Rep. Smith? No. Rep. Zhang?
No.
Rep. Zhang? No. Rep. Wiener? Excused. The roll is closed.
Thank you. And with 8 no's, 4 ayes, the amendment does not pass. We have an A3 amendment. Who will be moving the A3 amendment?
Madam Chair, I would move the A3 amendment.
Representative Kosnick, please move the A3 amendment and explain it, if you would like.
Committee members, this deals with line 9.15, and it deals with the 15% principal loan forgiveness. As we heard in testimony, there is no free lunch. What these lines actually do provide a 15% loan forgiveness amount that if we're providing an opportunity for entrepreneurs by qualifying for the loan in the first place, they should be able to meet the requirements of the loan. I don't know that we have a loan forgiveness in any other grant programs that we do, and this stays consistent with that you need to pay your bills, are already providing a probably below market rate incentive and opportunity, and this would continue to provide more funds for more people. And it's interesting, so on one hand we have an ask for higher administrative fees, but then on the other hand we're actually lowering revenues from repayment of these loans. So just to keep consistent, and I would encourage as a support the removal of this I believe it's a test, a pilot program to do the loan forgiveness, and I don't know that the incentive has data to support that it's actually even necessary.
Thank you for that. Chair Hassan, any comments on the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Lead Kosnick, for this conversation. I don't know about other districts, but I know in my district when I talk to our businesses, they are loaned up. They don't want any more loans because they're really struggling to make ends meet. So this language comes from support for small businesses. After all, we're all wanting in this at least committee to support small businesses. So doing 15% loan forgiveness encourages people to stay consistent paying their bills so they can get, after 2 years, they can get that loan forgiveness. And I really think this is good for businesses. This is good for uplifting from the bottom, and that's what this concept is. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. Any further discussion to the A3 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Any others before we turn it back to Lead Kosnick? Lead Kosnick, final words on the A3 amendment.
Jump over closing. I appreciate the intent of this program. We talked about it with the advocates here. I think all businesses would appreciate the being able to have some loan forgiveness. But I think this is, since it is a test, that I'm just suggesting that it's not particularly necessary, but I appreciate the author and the advocates bringing it forward. I don't know that that's exactly necessary, so I would encourage my members to support the amendment.
Thank you for that. All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. The amendment does not pass. And now to final discussion on the bill. Any member questions for Chair Hassan? Seeing none, I will turn it back to you, Chair Hassan, for final closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Seeing that we're very tight on time and the bill is being laid over, we can have more discussions. It's a great bill. Thank you for the lively discussion.
Thank you so much, Chair Hassan, and to all of our testifiers today. Next bill on the agenda is House File. Oh, I'm sorry. Rep. Hassan renews her motion that House File 3847 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The very important part I forgot to say. My apologies. Next bill on the agenda is House File 3448 from Chair Hassan again. Chair Hassan moves that House File 3448 be referred to the General Register. Chair Hassan, would you like to describe your bill and testifiers can make their way to the table while she gives us an overview?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 3448 is the department's policy bill, and we'll have the department do the walkthrough of what this policy bill includes.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. And while we get the technology set up, we'll let folks get comfortable. Thank you for joining us. Please introduce yourself and proceed with the with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kevin McKinnon. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at DEED, and here to talk about House File 3448, the Energy Transition Advisory Council, and adding a representative to that. As you know, we created an energy transition office a couple of years ago. We also have a grant program that we run through this office, as well as coordinated advisory task force. That task force does consist of a number of members representing cities, counties, labor, the workers, utilities, et cetera. And it does not, however, also include a member of a school district. And so one of the additions that we'd like to make to this council is adding a school district representative from the affected communities to help advise. This obviously the school districts are impacted much like cities and counties are, and that's the purpose of the Energy Transition Advisory Council, which is to advise the department and the legislature as to the effects of and what work that they can do to improve their communities post a power plant closure in their community. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about this.
Thank you for that. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my just question is, and I think this is a good thing to add school districts. I've been seeing this really close to home in my district. I guess my concern would be is that are we going to make sure and get the broad perspective from those school districts when they're kind of scattered all over the state? And I know when we're talking about energy transition, a community like up in Itasca County is going to be way different than one that's maybe located right in the metro. So how are we going to make sure that we get the right representation on that issue from school boards?
Please go ahead and answer. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Igo, that is a good question and something that we have certainly thought about. And if there is consensus that can be built across a number of school districts in represent in nominating someone to represent the school districts, that would be our intent.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Apologies for Ms. I didn't know your title, and I didn't want to get it wrong. any further discussion, any follow-up comment, Representative Igo?
I'll just say I think it's really, really important that we keep that in mind, because even if we compare a community like Becker to Cohasset, what the tax base for those school districts means is so drastically different. So I just want to make sure that when they're added to this conversation, we can make sure that all the varying opinions, because of all the different sites, it's very different, and we keep those communities in mind. I'm just really concerned about this. I've been watching this work very closely. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Igo. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, final comments. Chair Hassan.
Good bill.
Rep. Hassan renews her motion that House File 3448 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you so much. As the chair makes her way back to the gavel here, next we'll do a brief overview of the governor's bonding bill request in our committee. If our DEED team would like to go ahead and get started, and then I will turn the gavel back over to the chair.
Great. Again, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at DEED. Here to talk about the capital budget request that we have included in the governor's budget this year. We're requesting $5 million through two programs that we run at DEED, both with general obligation bond funding, the Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program for $3 million, and the Transportation Economic Development Infrastructure Program at $2 million. I will use what we call them, BDPI and Teddy, in this conversation. So just bear with me as I use some of those terms. The first program is the Greater Minnesota Business, Greater Minnesota BDPI, $3 million. This is a program where we provide grants to local units of government for up to 50% of the eligible costs of the public infrastructure needed to support the project. This program is only available outside of the seven-county metro area, and we may provide grants of up to $2 million every 2 years to the communities. Essentially, this program supports public infrastructure needs such as wastewater, water lines, roads, etc., that ultimately support industrial uses in communities, and whether that be through industrial parks or one-off industrial facilities. We've been administering this program since 2006 or so. It's very well known across our communities, and I'm sure that many of you have heard that they would probably like a lot more money in this program. We do run this on a rolling basis, so as projects happen, as communities have projects, they do apply to us. And we make awards, and basically it helps lower cost of development and helps communities prepare sites for development. A good example of this program is we provided $500,000 to the city of Laverne to extend streets and utilities to support a business called Lineage Logistics. As you can see, a $50 million investment creating 75 new jobs in Laverne is a pretty important project, and we were happy to help them with some of the infrastructure costs to support that business. You might ask what our balance is. If you recall, last year there was $10 million included in the capital investment bill that came to this program, and in addition, there's also $2 million each year that comes to deed in our general fund budget. And so the current balance in the program is about $7 million, and as I mentioned, this is a pipeline program, so we do have a couple of projects in the pipeline already, and as spring comes around, I'm sure there will be more. The second request that we have is the Transportation Economic Development Program, or TEDDY. This is a joint effort that we have with MnDOT, who help us review applications. We do this program one time per year through an RFP process, usually in the fall. This program is available statewide and offers support to communities to help with the local costs that are associated with some transportation improvements that are made, and whether that be interchanges or whether it be road rerouting, et cetera, we help offset the community's costs through this program based on the economic development factors that do exist in the community. We can pay for pre-designed land acquisition, construction, et cetera, and again, helps the local communities with the cost of the transportation infrastructure. A good example of this is the city of Dayton. We provided $1 million to help with the local costs associated with improving I-94 to serve a very large business park that is right off that interstate. Obviously, there's a safety component that MnDOT helps us with. We evaluate the economic development components of this. This particular project in Dayton, there are a number of businesses that are already there. There's a lot of traffic that was coming in and out, going through retail areas, et cetera. We were able to provide some money to help reroute some of that traffic and make it more efficient for the users in the business park. Our balance in this program, we received $1.5 million last year in the bonding bill. We are actually about to spend all of that money. We are making awards as a result of the RFP process that we did last fall, and we'll spend that money. And so the $2 million that we're asking for here, we would open it up again this fall and accept applications. We do have a number of communities that have asked about this, so we would anticipate their interest in the fall. Happy to answer any questions on those.
Questions?
I'll just add, I appreciate the presentation. The TEDDY grants are very effective for growing communities. I know Lakeville has had a use of it on the I-35 County Road 50. That's a major project down south from the I-35-494 that's currently being used. So very effective tools to keep people moving, keep commerce moving, and economic development. Thank you.
I don't see any other comments. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, for this presentation. With no other further business, we are adjourned.